I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. FIFA and Qatar have both been hit by waves of criticism lately. FIFA because of the corruption that's allegedly been festering within World Soccer's governing body, and Qatar because of the horrible conditions endured by migrant workers there, workers who are helping to build stadiums and infrastructure ahead of Qatar hosting the World Cup in 2022, not to mention Qatar's poor human rights record. We've talked about all that on the show before. Today, we want to focus on a different question. Why would Qatar even want to host a World Cup? The country is no soccer powerhouse. It's also a Muslim theocracy with no appetite for, say, Budweiser, a World Cup sponsor. So what's in it for the tiny Gulf Emirate? Here's The World's Aaron Schachter.
Why would Qatar do this? Simple, says Smith College economist Andrew Zimbalist. Vanity.
They'll end up getting, in terms of total revenue coming into the country, somewhere on the order of $4, maybe $5 billion. The outflow is $220+ billion. That's a terrible financial balance, no matter how you look at it.
So Zimbalist says, on the face of it, Qatar holding the World Cup is ridiculous and a ridiculous waste of money. But he says the small kingdom has a ridiculous amount of oil money and a vision for its future.
They would like to create a society that has many dimensions to it other than just as an oil exporter. So they've developed a finance sector. So they have tried to develop an entertainment and sports industry, and they view the opportunity to host sports mega events as opportunities to diversify their society, make their society more interesting, more attractive to people and businesses around the world.
They want to be known worldwide to every country on earth as a country. And one-stop shopping is what the World Cup offers.
Noah Feldman teaches at Harvard Law School. He's also a guy who knows what building a country is all about. He helped write constitutions for Iraq and Tunisia. Qatar has about 2.2 million residents. 90% of them are temporary foreign workers doing service jobs or construction, including building World Cup facilities. And there's some concern about the number of workers who have died during the construction boom. Feldman says Qatar's rulers are pulling out the stops to make the country more than what it is.
So anything that draws in attention, that shows the country to be a serious country where people might want to live, is beneficial to that. It makes them seem like a place where you'd want to live, where there are amenities, where there are museums which draw tourists, where there are international events. It puts them on the map, and that is part of the overall goal of populating the country.
There's been talk that conservative Qataris might be scared by the monarchy's attempt to draw more foreigners, that they'll see it as the Dubaiification of Qatar, creating another Vegas in the Gulf. So, the theory goes, the monarchy is cloaking everything as World Cup prep. But Ibrahim Al-Hashmi, who just graduated from Northwestern University's program in Doha, says people of his generation, at least, are excited about becoming a world-class country, and they know what's going on.
It has always been the case that Qataris are outnumbered by foreigners. And I don't think there is a problem in that because Qatar is a place for us all. And, you know, all these resources will be useful for the country. They are making, like, you know, the new transportation system, the rail system, and the new roads and the hotels. All of these are going to be useful to our economy.
But what happens if the FIFA bidding scandal permanently taints Qatar's World Cup? Or worse, if it's taken away and moved somewhere else? Harvard prof Noah Feldman says FIFA won't change the venue. And when these types of mega events go on, everyone forgets the bad stuff. So Qatar will get what it's paying for.
And this will be the first Arab World Cup. And that sends a message of regional leadership. It's not being held in Saudi Arabia. It's certainly not being held in Egypt or in North Africa. And that puts the Qataris at the center of the Arab world. And that also has a regional benefit for them.
And all this for a mere $220 billion. For The World, I'm Aaron Schachter.
And here's another example of an international sporting event that makes you go WTF. Azerbaijan today threw a huge party to open the European Games in its capital, Baku. And the what games, you ask? Yeah, good question. The multi-billion dollar event, kind of a mini Olympics for European countries, is seen as Azerbaijan's coming out party and a prelude to it hosting the actual Olympics someday. Thing is, Azerbaijan has a dismal human rights record. Journalists who criticize the games are now in jail, and Amnesty International, that pesky human rights group, has been barred from entering the country. Joining us from the opening ceremonies in Baku is reporter Jacob Resnick. Jacob, first of all, tell us what the European Games are.
The European Games are basically the culmination of decades of debate within Europe's Olympic committees of trying to put together their own version of like the All-America Games or the Pan-American Games or the Asia Games. You know, boosters say it's a great thing because, you know, it stretches the definition of what makes a European country. We're here in Azerbaijan, but we have Andorra and Italy and also Israel are here. And even neighboring Armenia, which is technically at war with Azerbaijan since the breakup of the Soviet Union, has sent about 20 athletes here to Baku. So you can make the argument that, you know, international sports can rise above war and politics. But others have questioned the need of a European Games because there are already a lot of qualifying events for European athletes.
Yeah, well, it all explains why I've seen Azerbaijan tourism spots on CNN. Why are people so upset, though, about Azerbaijan hosting these games?
Well, it's a small country, and it's known for its massive petroleum wealth, and also its zero-tolerance policy on dissidents. You know, especially those who question how the ruling Aliyev family has gotten so fantastically wealthy, when the answer is really pretty simple. You know, they orchestrate large-scale events like this one, and President Aliyev and his inner circle have been stage-managing every detail, and they've spared no expense and done a pretty competent job logistically. And their secret, which is not really a secret, is that the presidential family controls the construction companies and all the private firms that take all these lucrative no-bid contracts. So it's a really pretty neat transfer of wealth for them.
I hear that Lady Gaga is performing at the opening ceremonies. I mean, is this really a prelude for the Olympics? I mean, are they a contender?
I mean, as athletic games here, it's not really that big important. There's about 20 sports here, and 16 of them are Olympic competitions. But there's also a lot of minor sports, like three-a-side on basketball and sambo, a martial art that was developed in the Soviet Union. But really, the most important thing going on over the next couple weeks here will be a dozen qualifying opportunities for next year's Summer Olympics in Rio. So that's something for the European athletes a lot. But, I mean, a lot of the events here are pretty second, third tier. All the swimming events are for under-18s, and the athletics are third-tier contenders with pretty small countries contending, like Malta.
So who's there in attendance? Is it mostly locals, or do European sports fans fly to Baku for the competition?
That's a question I've had in my mind. I haven't really been able to tell so far. From what I can tell, it's mostly locals and people from surrounding countries and also you know, the entourage of the athletic delegations. I mean, you've got to remember, about 6,000 athletes are here and going to be competing between now and the 28th. And also the government has commandeered thousands of young people as volunteers who've been very, very helpful. They're walking around the city. They speak multiple foreign languages. In exchange, they get free tickets, and so that helps fill the seats as well.
Do you know how much money this has cost Azerbaijan?
I wish I did. The official cost is about 1.1 billion euros or so like that, and that doesn't take into account all the infrastructure they've built. This new Olympic stadium is in the hundreds of millions of euros. So the most generous estimates I've seen is upwards between 9 and 10 billion euros. So that's, I mean, 10 billion euros over $10 billion. That's the unofficial number, but the government has been denying that figure. But again, they're not releasing their own.
All right. Well, enjoy the evening, Jacob. We'll hear more from you next week. Jacob Reznek in Baku at the European Games. This is The World.